It's the Tiltcast episode 592, A Horse on a Dude.
And this week, guys, we talk Space Prison, Cataclysmo, Core Keeper, Orcs with an X, From Glory to Goo, and our new YouTube channel, Tiltcast.com Shorts with a Z. Stay tuned.
And we're back.
It's the Tiltcast.
It is. And it's an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason. And we're Sansa Rusty.
Yep. He is going to be having his birthday with his family today, and which I sadly forgot about. But that's why he's not here, which makes a lot of sense. So you will get I have no idea how much what the amount of bullshit is today, but we will talk about some games and some news. So just been busy the last couple of weeks. We'll be busy this week too. We're running about an episode behind, but for you guys, that doesn't mean anything. It means that you had a gap week and now you'll have two on the normal posting schedule. And we're in the middle of getting our YouTube channel launched. Which is funny because we had a YouTube channel literally active 8 years ago. I cannot remember any of the details, nor remember what email it's tied to. There's been multiple emails tied to this account, which means that it's out waving in the wind. But honestly, nobody watched the YouTube channel, so we're just going to relaunch it because whatever.
Yeah, we'll be... relaunching and you know, I'll plug it at the end of the episode now, but I am literally working on the inaugural video to launch tiltcast.com shorts.
Yeah.
And our goal kind of is to take some of our shorter and some of our longer discussions about specific games and cutting those out of the episodes, and pairing that with some let's play video of the game itself. So you'll see the game being played in the background, but you'll be listening to that clip out of the podcast, so that. You know, there's a little bit more context than just one of us being a talking head while we're playing. It's also a whole lot harder to do let's plays the way that we used to with all of us there playing the game. Obviously, because of geographical issues. So,
yeah, I mean, we could do a screen cap of Discord and put it in there. But honestly, I think this has a little bit more value nowadays. People don't always have the... attention span to watch a 30 or 40 minute video. If you want to, especially if you're just getting an opinion, I know that like I'll watch a couple of different YouTube reviewers that review smaller games. And usually if the video is like longer than 10 minutes, I'm sitting there like, well, I could be doing something else. This is one of those things that demands all my attention. So I kind of want it to be shorter, you know, like with podcasts, you know, you listen to them while you do other things. Most people do. I never sit with bated breath and just absorb a podcast, right? Like, nobody does that. I don't just sit there and just like, like, even if there's video, like, I'll look at the video occasionally, but most of the time I'm playing a game or I'm cooking or I'm doing chores or, you know, whatever, right? I'm mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
And so for
like
something
me to, and a lot of people, you listen to a podcast while you're at work. You know, if your job is something that doesn't require that you're talking to people all day, right? Like that's generally something to do that's not nearly as distracting or disruptive as like listening to music can be. Right. So that's one way I do it. That's how I listen to the majority of my podcasts.
Yeah, I think it's a better way of doing it, honestly, for most people, just because of just how you consume media, right? Like, with my job, I'm in meetings pretty much back-to-back for 6 of my 8 hours most of the time. And then the other 2 hours, it demands my full attention. So it's hard for me to listen to podcasts at work nowadays. But, long story short, we think this would be a good format to introduce people to the channel. Or if you just wanted to hear about one thing from the show, then it'll give you the opportunity to do that without listening to the full hour to 2 hour episode, which for some people, that's a lot of time. I realize that we're not this is not JRE, like in any shape or form. We don't have, you know, a billion lessons a month or whatever crazy number he has.
Well, we also don't have, you know, exclusives to new games before they come out, or advanced copies, because we are Joe Blow Schmo like you. And we pay for these things with our own money, and we play them, and we talk about them.
Yeah, I want to talk about a little bit of that stuff when we get to the news, because there is some pretty crazy news that's out there regarding some very, very established developers. But that's not us. We're not, I guess we're technically influencers, but I don't like to be part of that gross category. Right. But yeah, we've just been busy. And speaking of busy, I'm going to have to clean the algae out of my pool before I leave tomorrow. I was out of town last weekend, and I'll be out of town this weekend. I was out of town last weekend with my girlfriend, which is why we didn't record, because I was gone Saturday through Monday. In Dallas, watching some bands play, and spending, oh my God. So I spent a lot of money on barbecue. And I'm actually a little bit ashamed of this. So I typically go to Terry Black's. I like Terry Black's. Don't get me wrong. But it used to cost me about 30 to 40 bucks for myself, which is a decent amount of money, right? Like, I can go to a place here in town that's better than Terry Black's and get everything I want for about 20 bucks. Terry Black's is more expensive, but when I went there, I just didn't look at prices because I was like, this is what I'm used to paying. I hadn't been there for a couple of years. While I was ringing up, I watched my girlfriend's eyes get real wide, and I was like, what's wrong? And she just looked at the, because it kind of gives you a tally on a screen as you're getting it. It's one of those weird things where you walk in, you can see the smokers through glass, right? And they've got all that, they're loading it into these, like, warmer trays. I don't want to say warmer trays, they're kind of like a, I forget what you call it, but they're like those things where you can keep your barbecue warm. It's a I don't know. In my world, it's a styrofoam cooler lined with towels, and my meat's wrapped in butcher paper and foil. And this, it's the same thing. It's just at an industrial scale. So anyways, they're loading meat back there, and then you walk around this little queue, and then you got people that are kind of serving stuff buffet style. So you got all your sides in one section, and people serve you the sides, and then you go up front. You've got a guy that's literally pulling barbecue out and cutting it in front of you and giving you stuff that's out of those warmers, you know, and which is the nice thing about barbecue. You can leave it in one of those rings for like 2 hours before it's bad, right? If not longer. With no heat, you can leave it in there for 2 hours and it'll still come out smoking hot. But so they're just cutting your food, right? And so I was like, man, I'm in Texas. I need beef, right? Texas isn't known for their pork. So I got myself, you know, they had beef short ribs, which were huge, right? My beef short rib was about 2 pounds. And then I got some slices of brisket. I was like, yeah, just give me 4 slices of brisket. Well, that was like a pound and a half of brisket. They gave me some thick ass slices of brisket, right? Got some mac and cheese and like 2 pounds of rib, right? My girlfriend got some brisket, about a pound, and some coleslaw and some mac and cheese, right? So 3 pounds of brisket, 2 pounds of rib, 3 sides, 2 drinks. What do you think the total was?
50 or 60 bucks.
You are so off. $120, and then I tipped 20%, so it was at $142.
Holy fucking shit. That ship better be made of gold.
That was the most expensive barbecue I've ever had in my life. But I didn't want to back down, right? Like, I wasn't going to, like, give it back. You know? Right. I just, my rib by itself was $80. Just the rib, because it was 2 pounds. It's $40 a pound. Dang. It was good. I had leftovers. My eyes were bigger than my stomach. I had another serving worth of leftovers, which was sad. Yeah, very sad.
Dang.
So, that being said, I was a little bit upset about the price of that. And I was like, I bet I can do better on a lower budget, right? So, I had some ribs in the freezer. So, when I got back home on Monday, took the ribs from the freezer, threw them in the fridge to thaw. And then Wednesday, I smoked those puppies up. So, it was ribs were about two-thirds the size of the rib that I had. Just got them, you know, a rack of beef ribs from Costco, short ribs, right? About $22 a rack is what I got, right? So it's about three meals for me, three Hungry Man meals. And so that's $22. I was trying to go back keto this week because I'm going to be eating like shit for the next 4 days anyway. So I made, it's going to sound gross to some of you, but it's actually not bad. Not bad. This is actually delicious. I took some cauliflower, threw it in the microwave to steam it real quick, right? Got it most of the way cooked, chopped it kind of fine, added cheese, right? So two different types of cheese, some pepper flakes, some garlic, a tiny bit of salt, and then I chopped up four slices of bacon, fried it up, and mixed it in, and then threw it in the smoker. And my cauliflower mac was smokier than the mac and cheese they served us was really substandard, to be honest with you. It was barely smoky. It's like, why are you serving mac and cheese that's not smoky at one of the best barbecue joints in town? So my total meal cost, including the cheese, which I did not use all of, right? If I broke it into its base components, it was probably about $28 for three servings, three huge servings, right? Let's say $27. So about $9 to $10 per serving. And for about $20, I got about as much food as I did there. And it was barbecue. And my ribs, I'll be honest, are better. I'm throwing it out there. My ribs are fucking fantastic. I put a lot of TLC. Those fucking ribs took me 9.5 hours. And they were delicious. And I'm not going to go back to Terry Black's again. It's way too expensive now. And I thought this was weird because we're on our way, and it's in Deep Ellum. If you know anything about Dallas, Deep Ellum is like kind of a downtown district that's where all the bars and clubs are, right? And parking's atrocious there. And at night, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's like a zoo. There's so many people. It's like Times Square or something. There's so many people, like elbow to elbow crowds. There's 100,000 people down there, right? And so I did not want to deal with all that traffic. So I got an Uber, and I was on the Uber. My Uber driver was from Mississippi. I was telling him where I was going. He's like, oh, yeah, that place is good, but they're kind of expensive. He's like, let me give you this other place that you should go to. So he gave me a suggestion for another place, which I should have gone to. I should have been like, just take me there. But at that point, I was like already committed to the Uber ride and everything else. Had we gone to the other place, it's right next door to Bucky's, and I could have gone to Bucky's and got me some barbecue at the same time. Speaking of Bucky's, I've never been in a Bucky's. I've passed it many times. I go to Dallas fairly often. It's right off the highway on my way in McKinney, Texas, because that's where I go through getting into town. And always pass it, never went, right? Just see the sign. Don't even see the whole area from the ground or from the highway. We just went on a whim because I was like, whatever, let's just go to Bucky's. I've never been to one. She's like, all right, let's go. So we went to Bucky's. That's a trip. That is so weird. I was a little bit overwhelmed. The amount of Texas influence on a Bucky's is crazy. So first of all, there's like 200 pumps, maybe not 200, 150, I'm not even exaggerating. It's like a whole Walmart parking lot full of pumps, right? And inside is the size, about half the size of an old Walmart. It's a gas station. In the middle, they're chopping brisket and barbecue and grilling. On the back, they've got homemade beef jerky on the back wall. They sell all over. They've got a whole section that's just nothing but like Texas collectibles and Bucky's collectibles. It's a whole clothing section the size of, you know, the men and boys section combined at a normal Super Walmart, right?
Yeah. It's like if you took a Walmart and a weird amalgamation of a Walmart and like the front half of a Bass Pro Shop. You know, near the registers.
That's accurate.
And a Quick Trip, as we know it here in Oklahoma, and smash the two together.
Yeah,
in a single store.
The parking lot was one third the size of a Walmart. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like one third the size of a Super Target in there. Like, what the? I was, like I said, I was a little bit overwhelmed. The only thing I bought in there, I bought some beef jerky. I was like, it can't be. They had some ghost pepper beef jerky. And I was like, I wonder if it's even hot. It's my experience so far in Dallas is nothing's actually that spicy. That was fairly spicy. Yeah. The ghost pepper jerky was pretty good. It's very, very meaty, like a little bit chewy. Decent amount of spice. I ate the whole bag on my way back home.
I just feel like it's a little overpriced for the amount that you get.
I think I got half a pound for $10. I didn't get it from the counter. I got the prepackaged stuff. I should have went and got the counter stuff just to try it out. But yeah, Bucky's is huge. I did not expect that. it threw me off balance a little bit with how big it was. And then, like I said, like three blocks down the road, this barbecue joint, I think it was called Hutchins, which is what the guy was recommending. Like the whole drive over there, me and this guy were just talking about making barbecue. I guess he was a backyard barbecuer like myself. But yeah, it was a trip. It was a trip. Show was good, right? Most people don't give a shit about what I saw. But anyways, I saw a couple of bands. With my girlfriend, and then spent way too much money on merch, spent way too much money at a record store there in town. I feel like they had, if it was in my collection and it was listed on vinyl, it was probably there. It's a little bit overpriced. That's why we weren't doing this last week, because I was fucking around in Dallas-Fort Worth. I was trying to my girlfriend has only been to Dallas a couple times, and she didn't understand like how big it was. And that Metroplex is huge. Like I was trying to explain to her, like, we're literally just driving around a small section of the map. I was like, we could drive end to end for like 2 hours before we got one end to the other end. I was like, especially if there's traffic. It's like, that's why I always avoid this if I'm going anywhere else in Texas, to just avoid all of Dallas, because it adds an hour and a half to your trip. Had a lot of fun. Didn't play any video games. I played video games this week, which we'll get to. But that's what I've been up to. And then next week I'll be in El Paso for work for most of the week. So I'm actually actively updating my Steam Deck right now while we're talking, because... And trying to figure out what I want to play on Steam Deck while I'm out there. I'm one of those weirdos that... I say weirdo. I really like... here's the mouse I was looking for. Yeah. I really like using a mouse and keyboard with my Steam Deck and connecting it to a TV. Because I have a hard time... The biggest downside to a Steam Deck or any handheld gaming is my eyes are bad. And I have a hard time staring at that little bitty screen unless the things I'm looking at are pretty large. So,
yeah.
I'm actually actively downloading Elden Ring. I tried that out. It runs not bad. About like playing a game on a console. when you're used to everything running over 100 FPS, like, it is a little bit of a shock to run something at 40 FPS. Also, some of these games just eat your fucking battery, and that is one of the ones that eats your fucking battery. But I'll just plug it in while I play. I should bring an extension cord, too, just in case.
You probably should.
But, yeah. What have you been up to this last week?
Well, you know, not a whole ton. I've really been still just working on some image editing stuff for the podcast and working on this this new video idea. Getting workflow down for that, and I've actually got it down where I'm actually sitting here and putting together final cut of a video as we speak, and it's not taking me that long at all.
I think the hardest part is you're going to have to listen to episodes and figure out what part of the episode you want to cut.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, and then if we don't already have gameplay video of it, having you, Rusty, or myself get actual gameplay video for the length of the audio that we've got, right? For the most part, just getting a workflow down for that and learning myself a new tool, which a surprising number of movie and effect studios have been using for several years. Weta kind of made it initially had a hand in creating it, and now it's grown way past them. It's part of its own company. I think Blackmagic bought it, but it's called DaVinci Resolve.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, what's the name of the program you're talking about?
And, it, you know, learning to work with it, because, you know, it's not as straightforward as like like Windows Movie Maker or Adobe's Final Cut can make it, right? Because they've hard coded a lot of just like basic, you're a pleb user. We've got all these fancy just plug it in and play it tools, right? I don't need any of that. I'm an advanced enough user to figure that stuff out on my own. So I made conscious effort of, plus you don't have to pay for DaVinci Resolve unless you want like a bunch of studio effects. So I was like, well, I'll download the free version and learn it. And now that I've learned it and what I'm doing with it, it's actually pretty easy to cut videos together and put custom audio in it. And it actually renders fairly fast. Granted, I mean, I have a decent machine. I don't have a beast of a machine by today's standards, but I still have a 9900 KS i9, and I've got a 3080, and I've got 16 gigs of RAM.
It's above mid-tier for the most part still.
Yeah, for the most part. It still plays games above mid-tier. Put it that way. Though I am starting to reach a limit with what I can do without Game Bar, because a resizable bar in BIOS is now a huge thing memory-wise that games are starting to utilize. But for older games, heck yeah. And for the most part, for this video editing, it's it's really good. If we ever start, wanting to, so little inside baseball, little bit of a spoiler, but we don't know for sure that we'll make this happen anytime soon or not, but we have been toying with the idea of also having a separate channel for, just for, podcast episodes, like full length, regardless. So that's something we're toying around with the idea of.
And both you and Rusty would have to use your camera more often.
Yep. But, we've got ideas we're working on. So if we ever get there, I might have to, get me 16 more gigs of RAM to stick in this baby. But aside from that, super easy tool to work with. It's been fun to learn.
Well, that's good. I'm checking startup movies.
Oh, nice.
Oh, these are all pretty neat.
So that's for the most part what I'm doing because of it. I've not really played a whole lot of game, though, now that a lot of this is done. I plan on I've installed 7 Days to Die, and I plan on playing around with that a little bit. We'll see how she blows. I have not yet installed and played Fallout London. I've not had time for that, and I know I will get to it soon.
I thought about doing that this week, and I was like, no, because I don't want to try to figure out the mod situation for doing that on Proton.
For me, I know if I start it, I'm going to dive into it freaking hard. And it's going to take up all of my free time. So, just trying to pace myself.
What have you been playing this week?
I told you. I've been playing with DaVinci Resolve.
That's not the same thing.
I really haven't played anything at all this week. I just haven't had the time. All my free time I've put into this. Yeah, because anything with a steep learning curve, it takes you a little bit longer than you initially think it would take you. But now that I've got workflow down, I'll have game time back.
Yeah, I have a feeling I've got a couple of games that I'll be playing a lot of. I actually can just start with that. I've been playing a lot of Core Keeper again. So Core Keeper 1.0 launches here, I think, on the 26th. So I was like, I need to see if I still like that game. Spoiler alert, I still like that game a lot. It's just different, right? Like, so Core Keeper is kind of like a little bit of Minecraft, a little bit of Stardew Valley, a little bit of Terraria, right? It's kind of like all of those kind of rolled into one, and I think that's kind of what makes it special. You've got these bosses that are kind of in these different biomes. Everything kind of spirals out in a circle around you, a loose circle. It generates a a random map every time you load in. And kind of the goal is to continue to progress. And I'm wondering what changes in 1.0, right? But like in the current state, it's very playable. I don't know what it's like at the end game, so I've never gotten there. But you mine and craft things, right? Like you mine through blocks and then you craft things and you got little mine carts that you lay out tracks for to help you get to these other areas faster, right? And then you got bosses that you got to fight. And then you've got like skill trees and stats that you slot into everything. And it's just very, I don't know, satisfying in a way that's hard to describe. I really like games like that. I really like games that are chill, that have moments of, what do you call it? Like moments of tension and then downtime in between. And I think that's why I like crafting games a lot. I think that's why I like turret defense games a lot. Tower defense games a lot.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like Core Keeper is one of those games that's pretty special. I had the first free weekend I've had in a long time. I spent 8 hours listening to records and playing Core Keeper. Like, super chill, losing time like crazy. It's like, what is even going on? I look down at my watch. Yeah, I'm flipping the record already. This is record number 6. Like, what's the fuck? Like, it's just so much. So much goodness. It's just very, very fun. And I like it, right? I like it a lot. I'm looking through my recently played now that I got my Steam Deck in my hand. Let's see. Library. All games. Last played. So the other game, I've got actually a few games to talk about. The other game I've been playing a lot of, and this was a Splattercat recommend. Typically, I subscribe to Splattercat, and he is one of the – I will watch long format videos of him and then listen to him while I do something else. But looking through for different games to play, things that would run on my Steam Deck, and 95% of everything he plays will play on my Steam Deck. And he was playing a game called Space Prison. I was like, all right, I'm going to actually kind of pay attention to this. I like Space Prison. So let me explain what Space Prison is. You're a prisoner in space. You were arrested for speeding and you got sentenced to 150 years in a maximum security prison out in the middle of space. It's an RPG. And what it does is you essentially do a bunch of quests for different people in gangs. You kind of pick between one of two main factions for a gang. Each give you different quests. All those quests are talking to other people, maybe sneaking around and using tools that you craft to unlock different areas. It's got a turn-based combat system. It's kind of got a grid system for when you explore where it randomly generates levels in between. So for me to go from like the cell block to the medical bay, like I've got like 4 nodes I got to go to, kind of like Slay the Spire style, right? And it'll either be an encounter, it'll be an event, or it'll be a combat thing. And so if you do the combat, it's in a turn-based combat style, although kind of similar to like Darkest Dungeon in that you have certain abilities that are only available depending on what squares you're in. And certain abilities that can only affect certain lines of the enemy. And then you use you make and create weapons because you're in a prison. You start with nothing. Say what?
I was just going to say, I'm with you there. I just really love that sort of tower defense.
Well, no, it's not really tower defense. It's just, and I'll talk about tower defense because I played some of that. But like you kind of go through the different levels of the prison and you fight your way to each area. And then sometimes you'll have a combat encounter there, but you're kind of, the fighting is to get materials to create new things. And then while you're in the area that you're exploring or working with people or doing quests in, you're sneaking around, right? You're trying to hide contraband on you. You've got these little places where you can store contraband in each area. So I've got materials for crafting different items in the different wings, which is what I'm doing. So, like, you have 2 meters, you have a hunger, well, 3 meters, you have health, hunger, and hope. If your hope gets really low, you get negative status effects. If your hunger gets really low, same thing. You can catch diseases and things like that, right? Or stay poisoned or whatever the case may be. And it's up to you to know where each of the, what each of those different levels has items for. So you know what to grab. It's got a lot of comedy in it. And a lot of goofiness. The art style is very cel-shaded, hand-drawn stuff, right? It's all done kind of a, I forget, like 2.5D. Right. Dialogue's campy and goofy. I don't know. A lot of it's just, it's funny. Kind of has like a Ren and Stimpy inspired gross style, if that makes any sense. Right. Like, I need hair clippings for different things. Right. So I pull them out of like shower drains. And I know that that's over in the shower area. Right. I've got to get clean. So I got to use soap. So I've got a craft soap, and I craft soap out of different things, right? I've got a whole army of rats that you collect kind of Pokemon style, and I'm training my rat army for my fights. So that's something I'm currently in the middle of doing. My rats have little brass knuckles right now, and then some of them have like razor whips and little bitty trench coats that I equip them with. It's kind of goofy. There's like this... It's a Polish game. I'm going to say that. Eastern European, which has none of the same sensibilities when it comes to what is considered PC and not. I'll just say that. There are different smutty posters that you can find as collectibles. So I'll just say I've got a Don't Starve one that I found. I've got one for Space Prison. And the other one is for Manor Lords. And I'm actually going to send these to you, Jason, because you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Nice.
So just check on the side there. So the Don't Starve says Don't Succumb. And Manor Lords is spelled M-A-N-N-E-R, Manor, instead of M-A-N-O-R.
Oh, so like good manners.
Yeah, it's a BDSM diorama and some really hokey looking art. It's very interesting. The Don't Starve one is the one that's... the Don't Starve one is pretty crazy.
That a dude... Is that a horse riding a dude? Playing a horse. What the fuck? Wow.
Yeah, it's a horse riding a dude playing a horse. The art.
Man, they're, with that diorama, they're kind of pushing stuff as much as, what's the studio that did fucking Cult of the Lamb and Binding of Isaac and shit?
Oh, those are different studios.
Oh, I know, but
Ed McMillan is the Binding of Isaac guy and Super Meat Boy. And then Cult of the Lamb, I want to say, I don't know who Cult of the Lamb's done, but it's not Ed McMillan.
This is why we have Google. Publisher.
I want to say it's a Devolver publisher, but I
Devolver
don't
know. Devolver Digital, yeah.
But I don't know who made it, though.
Yeah. Massive Monster.
I think that may be their only game. But, it's a weird game. But Space Prison, pretty all right. Lost some time with that. I had to, so speaking of tower defense, I was just really jonesing for it and trying to figure out what games I had that were tower defense. I played a little bit more of The Last Spell, but I wanted to try something new. which Last Bell is like turn-based tower defense, basically. I played another Splattercat game called From Glory to Goo. That is an interesting game. It looks like SimCity 2000, but in space, right? And you're building, you're finding spots for materials, and you have these goo aliens that spawn anywhere outside of your immediate perimeter, right? And then you have to build these things called thumpers that thump the ground so that things that are burrowing can't burrow close to you, and then you use that to expand your territory. And you're constantly managing your water, your power, and your production. And what you're doing is you're expanding your territory so you can get more resources in between waves of attacks. And then you're building up walls and turrets and troops to help hold back those waves. And it's done in a very, like, Super Nintendo meets SimCity 2000 art style. And there's a lot of creatures, right? Like, as I've gotten to the higher waves, wouldn't surprise me if there were 30,000 sprites on screen. Like, it gets pretty nuts. But it runs really good. Like, again, something I'll probably test tonight so that I can see if it runs. Test it on my Steam Deck. But pretty fun game. Very much a mouse and keyboard game. I would not use a controller for this. I think it would be maddening to do so. Another reason to bring a mouse and keyboard while I'm out. But Glory to Goo, that's the long short of it. You have like permanent unlocks, right? So you load a map, and then based on how well you do and the difficulty level, you get so much goo, and you use that goo to unlock new captains, new spaceships, and I'll explain the spaceships in a second, in more, I forget what they call them in Helldivers 2, but it's the same thing. More like commissions or something. So basically you have like a modifier you add to the level. So like 10% more armor, or you use less materials. I can't remember the other ones. You can see mountain ranges earlier because you use the mountain ranges as choke points for the goo, basically. So stratagems. So you unlock stratagems as well using that goo. And then different win conditions also unlock different items as well. So each of the captains you can get all have different abilities. So they play kind of like an RTS character in like StarCraft, in that they level up and they get like my guy got rocket launchers, or he's got a drone that he can use to scout ahead. And you use the troops kind of to move around the map and help hold off the wave, because little aliens will just kind of wander into your base. And it doesn't take very many of them to really wreck your shit. Like one alien in 15 seconds can wreck a building all by itself. 30 of them can wipe your base out in a minute. Like, it's pretty crazy. And then you have your starship, and your starship has guns on it and can provide additional production or science to your ground crew, which is really useful. So you can kind of develop your ship at the same time you're developing your colony. And that ship can provide you with support for your team on the ground. The goal is to last so many waves. And the harder you set the difficulty, the more goo you get. It took me about 2 hours to figure out how to beat it. I thought, like, what the fuck am I doing wrong? I just had to play it a lot. I just kept failing runs and getting a little bit of material out of every run, but I was failing hard. And then I just, like, the quick tip is to not start building walls till you know what direction the enemy's coming from. And after you get past that first couple of waves, you can wall in the inner city and then start expanding and then walling in whatever needs cover, basically, because you'll have enough troops to cover them while you're, you know, expanding.
Right. Similar to a lot of strategy games like that, like Age of Empires, etc.
Yeah, but if you like those types of games, like, it's a good mix of like a building sim plus tower defense, and I like it. I like it a lot. Like, how many? I've got 13 hours in that game, and that was this week, right? And that was this week being busy. Something else I played a lot of that I didn't talk about at all last week. I played quite a bit of Orcs again. That's ORX. Orcs is a weird strategy game, kind of like a... So it's a card battler plus a tower defense game more than it is a city building game. So kind of like playing a board game or something, right? So like you have a little castle in the middle of the map, right? That's got a road. And the longer your roads are, the more income you get from the end of the road back to the castle. So you have a hand that you draw, and that hand has different cards. And each of those cards are different road types, different economy things, different spells, different castle pieces, etc. And they each cost a certain amount of gold. So you build your economy, and then you place cards to build the bigger castles. The bigger the castle, the more firepower it has. The castles get modifiers that you can play on them. So, like, you can add cannons or poison arrows or fire arrows, etc. So you add those modifiers based on the enemy type that you got rolling in. As you play the game, it's in a run-based system. So you play a run. A long time ago, I got pretty far in this game. And then I deleted my progress because it's been 2 years since I've played it. And I started from scratch. And it's harder than it used to be. But yeah, you build up these towers, and then these towers fight the orcs, and the idea is to clear out the orcs, right? And then in between, you've got little random events where you choose a map tile, and that map tile will have a little story event, kind of like a D&D section, right? So like you have a chance of getting something good or bad that happens, and a permanent unlock that happens to your empire. And that permanent impact might be like, you know, do 25% more damage to orcs, like to give a really basic one. It might be something like that, right? Towers have 50%, you know, defense at night. So anyways, during the day, you build up and you get little random orc attacks. And at night, you get swarmed by orc hordes. And, you know, the longer you play the game, there's actually more enemies than just the orcs. The orcs are just kind of like the starter enemy. The other factions play completely different than the first faction, too. Like, the first faction is all about towers. The second faction, if I remember right, was all about troops. So you build different types of maps with that faction. But it's a really fun game. It has some performance issues, though. When there's, like, I don't know, 3,000 units on screen all shooting projectiles, even on my 4090, sometimes dips to about 10 FPS. So that's not a game I'll be playing while I'm out, because I don't know how it's going to play on my Steam Deck, right? My 4090 can barely handle it at times. I doubt my Steam Deck can. But if you can deal with that, it's still in early access. I think it's fun. I think that's what's overshadowing it, honestly. Like, everything else about the game's pretty fun. That performance issue is bugging the shit out of me, though. And I wish they would get their shit together, because that it is a fun game, and I do appreciate the hell out of it. But that's most. Let's see, is that everything I played? Yeah, that's all I've played. I've got that Kenichigami game. Like, I might play that via Game Pass on cloud on my Steam Deck while I'm out, just depending if I want to or not. That game's a little bit stressful to me. So, like, it takes me a second to get in the right mindset to want to play it. I know tower defense seems like it would be stressful. It's not really to me. And I like these run-based games so that I can just kind of, like, chill while I'm listening to music and then just kind of blow shit up. Probably also try Shin Megami Tensei 5 on the Steam Deck, too, while I'm out and see how that runs.
Nice.
But, yeah, I've been Oh, one last game. I did forget this. Cataclysmo. I don't know if I talked about that at all last week. So Cataclysmo is different. I am still getting the hang of that game. I'm trying the campaign out. I need to just try a skirmish sandbox mode. But you have characters you can move all over the screen. So it's like you have you're fighting a horde with a handful of units, right? Like, I don't know if you're ever going to get to a point where you've got more than 50 units. I've been playing maps with unit like a squad of 10 at max. But you get hordes of enemies that rush your castle, and you build your castle kind of like Legos would be the easiest way to describe it. It's like blocks of stone and wood. You build platforms for your characters to shoot off of, basically. And then in between hordes, you build an economy in a base, kind of like you turtle, right? Like old StarCraft. The way you're not supposed to play it, the way that everybody really wanted to play it that was playing solo. So you turtle, and you create a castle. You got to keep things from hitting. So you build walls around it, and on those walls you place battlements, and then in between you take the people that have been defending the castle, or most of them. You go around scouring the map for resources, like extra scavenge resources, plus you're knocking out little horde spawners, basically. So you get less hordes on the sides that aren't defended.
Right.
And so you'll get a notification of where the horde's going to spawn from on the night. Like, it's just enough time to get your troops positioned. So you really need to have your defenses shored up on all spaces before night hits. Like, at least have something there, right? So you can prevent them from just swarming in and destroying everything. But yeah, it's done in a very simplistic yet clean art style that's appealing. I didn't think it would be appealing when I first looked at it, but in motion it looks really good. And it does spawn pretty big hordes of little, like, Cthulhu horrors that come and attack your base that all have different stats, etc., to attack you. That game runs smooth as butter. But Cataclysmo's kind of something special. I want to play a little bit more of it and see how that works out. But again, I've got games on games, right? I got my crafting games. I've got my tower defense games. I've played more 7 Days to Die. I'm on night. I think I'm on day 45, which means I've played it for about 45 hours because I have it on the standard day-night cycle length. So 45 since 1.0 launched. I erased all my other saves because I'm a crazy person. But I've got it on hold because I wanted to try out other things. I didn't want to come back to week 3 of 7 Days to Die. So I'll probably play a little bit here in a couple weeks again. And I feel like I'm at a space where the horde's going to have to really ramp up in a way that I just can't deal with. Because I've got max tier shotguns right now. And max tier rifles unlocked right now. So I've actually got a semi-automatic sniper rifle that I'm using to thin out, like, bigger enemies. And a shotgun with a duckbill mod that's an auto shotgun to clear out hordes. I've got electric fences in layers. So the horde gets stuck on my little bridge. So one thing that I think is really helpful that I finally just figured out, and I don't know how in 800 hours I haven't figured this out. When you're building that horde base to get something to tango over to you, it's good to use a very, very small walkway that's pathable by a zombie. And the bars, the just, you know, basic bars, like I started with cobblestone bars, but now they are steel. So I've got a steel bar walkway that comes over to my base with 3 layers of electric fences in between that are all in a location that the horde can't really attack. They're all in steel reinforced, like bunkers to protect those things. I still haven't gotten it routed in a way where I can repair it while I'm still inside. But regardless, I've got such a multi-layered defense that I just sit there and shoot things as they come at me. And nothing really fucks me up too bad. Like, the cop spit does hurt, but, like, I've got all the meds that I need in that little base. Nothing set up to one-shot me. I still haven't run a demolisher, so I know that's a thing that's coming up. But there are some new zombie types. There's one that, like, drops acid everywhere it goes, and I've had that on a couple of horde nights, and that does some pretty decent block damage. So I've been popping those guys as soon as they pop up, like, really fast, because, like, they even damage concrete pretty well. But yeah, like, so far it's really fun. Again, I'm just at a spot where I think I can come with my current setup with no changes, could probably handle 4 more horde nights of that base without additional reinforcement. I'm just worried that, yeah, and it's like the basic is, I guess you haven't played a lot of it. You build a staircase, right, with multi-access. So my staircase has ladders. So I have staircase built into like a T pattern, right? So stairs coming from the left and right and stairs coming front to back, right? And so it comes up to a T point, and then on all of those stairs I built steel ladders. I started initially with wood, right? Like, this was a cobblestone base before, but I put wooden ladders on all faces of that, so the zombies have a very obvious way up to me. And then I've got a bridge that's made out of bars, so it's just one, basically like 1 foot path ahead, so that forces them to go single file. And if they try to go around each other, they fall off. And it's like, I don't know, 7 blocks high. So it's high enough that I can jump without breaking a leg. But also high enough that I'm not fucked. If I have to fall, that's the point. The way that I get up is the zombies can't crawl up a ladder if it's 2 squares above the ground. So I've got this little like cube that I made that's my base. So it's got like multiple supports. So if they break supports, it's going to take a while for it to fall. And it's got a hole in the middle that they can go into. And that hole is covered by bars. And I've got little safe points if cops get down there. And I've got hatches to drop bombs out of. But in the middle there is just this empty area that if something gets below me, I can shoot down into them. So if they break through the outer 2-layered wall, again, I've got enough support that it would take quite a bit before this thing fell. They'd have to demolish my footer altogether. My footer is also built on a road, so it's also like goes down 2 tiles of concrete into the ground. So again, it would take a pretty massive invasion of zombies to really fuck this up to where I would fall and die. But and on top, I've got bars so I can shoot the vultures that come down, right? Occasionally, for whatever reason, zombies. They'll like build a human pyramid sometimes and like climb up really high. And so on the hatch that I have on the roof, I've got spikes around it and a robot that like knocks shit off. It's a robotic sledge. So it'll sometimes like, if they get close to my hatch, like pop them in the face and knock them off the roof. Then of course, since I've got a bar roof, I can just point my, you know, my gun up, my shotgun up and just blow away the dude that's on the roof. But yeah, if you build like a little like area with only one facing window, which I've just got a hole, I can shoot through that. They're going to try to come at me. If I run completely out of bullets, I can melee through that hole. And there's a whole science behind that. Say science. Horde science behind that. And they can only come single file. But then they always get caught on the electric fences. So they're basically frozen in place. And I just headshot all of them. I got armor-piercing bullets with my sniper rifle. So I can sometimes like shoot 4 zombies at a time with 1 bullet. Once they all get tangoed into that, because the electricity, I think it arcs to the guy behind him. Even if it doesn't, it stuns the guy in the front, and you've got a pretty easy headshot. So yeah, I'm like I'm at a point where the game's not terribly hard. I'm doing tier 4 clears by myself because I've got slug ammo, an auto shotgun, a semi-automatic sniper rifle, right? Like I switch it out for a reflex sight when I'm doing the horde clear indoors. And then it just turns into single shot carbine, right? I've got a clip mod on the gun that's got like 18 shots in the magazine, and it just hits like a truck. So like the game feels, it's really well optimized. I am not getting any kind of like lag, and I'm playing it on max settings. And it's also doing gangbusters right now on PS5 and Xbox One. So, they relaunched it on there. They're now updating the console platform with the PC platform concurrently and currently working on crossplay. So you can play if you're on console with your PC buddies, as long as they're not running mods. So, 7 Days to Die is in a fantastic spot right now. If you're looking for something that's just a chill game, like if you're playing single player, you can pause anytime and even if you accidentally fuck up an Alt F4 out of it, like it saved probably a minute ago. So it does some kind of wizardry where it's just basically always saving and it keeps track of where everything is in the world. You can drop a piece of loot 2 miles away and then come back and that piece of loot is still there. I think part of that is they despawn the zombies after you kill them. So if you remember before, like you just have heaps of gore all over the place where zombies died, they don't do that anymore. The only blocks that stay are like zombie animals, so you can carve them, and that's pretty much it. But like all the zombies, like after a few seconds after you kill them, they disappear, and I think that helped the performance a lot. But 7 Days to Die is pretty fucking solid right now. It's the best survival crafting game. Just I'm gonna always say that until something else better comes out that's that reliably good. It's the best one of those. I don't know what the end game is at this point, right? Like, you survive as long as you can. But I'm still not at a point where I can clear like a, you know, a tier four out in the radiation zone. I can barely clear a tier three in the radiation zone because it adds like three tiers to it being in the radiation zone, which means the every building I go into is filled full of like 30 radioactive zombies or a radioactive cop, which is going to take like four headshots with a sniper rifle to kill. But fortunately, my shotgun has a dismembering mod, so I use that to blow their legs off so I can kill them faster. again,
nice.
This game's just nuts. And yeah, it still looks like a fucking old ass game, but it's kind of proof of concept that good gameplay trumps really good graphics. So if you're into that, every single block in the entire world is basically destructible. I say basically because the only thing is your, I think it's called like your founder stone or whatever, the area that you can set around your base. Maybe it's called a flagstone. I don't know. You can build this out of almost nothing, and then you can only have two of them in the world. But what it does is it sets a boundary around your base where nothing can spawn, basically, which is great when you're using – you use that for your base. Especially like I found a thing called a Moe's General Store for my camp, and that had two different additional – so it has a general store up front. The general store has a – area in the back for additional storage, and then on one side of it, it has a garage or a bath, like a public bathroom, which is I've completely reinforced and used for storage. And then on the far right, it has a big old workshop that's all with a whole walled in courtyard. So I use that to keep things from spawning in those additional buildings, and then I've got all of that stuff crammed full of crafting benches, right? So like I've got a crafting or forges and both of those that I can just turn on and then make concrete all day or make steel all day or whatever. The game's still a little bit of a struggle bus too, I will say. Like it takes, I don't know. I think it takes, you got to make it past day seven. Day seven always sucks. I died on my day seven, right? Because I had a really poorly designed base. And then I learned from those mistakes, right? And then pretty soon, by day 14, I had a pretty solid base. And by day 21, I had an impenetrable base. Day 21 was a fucking cakewalk. Like, I had way more ammo than I needed. And I obliterated everything that came up to me. I think that the key to that is getting really good melee weapons and finding them, sticking to, like, only two trees. Building up a tree for combat pretty quickly is, I think, key. But you need to focus on one weapon group for a while. Like I focused on shotguns until I was at level four shotguns before I focused on rifles. But when you do that, all the weapon parts I found were shotgun related. All the books I found were all shotgun related because I focused on that. And that got me one high tier weapon group. Like I said, I've got max tier shotguns now. And max tier strength. But that was like 30 hours of working on that to get to those max levels. So, and then I just barely focused. I focused enough on the intellect tree to make sure that I was getting some, vehicle books. I think another trick is just making sure you can go farther than your starting area, and don't do Navis Gain. If you've played this before, don't do Navis Gain. Do one of the pre-gens or a random gen. And the reason for that, I found is that when you go through the quests, the last starter quest is find a trader. Well, they're in the random gen, they're putting the trader next to a settlement. So in Navis Gain, the trader is kind of far from any neighborhood. And the reason that's harder in Navis Gain is because you really need to move from the forest trader to one of the other traders. And you're going to have to reestablish your base in Navis Gain further out from the forest, which means that you have to learn desert survival or snow survival or one of those other things. And the random gen, you don't have to do that because it always spawns the trader next to like a small city or a village or whatever, which means that you have, I don't know, 20 POIs to scavenge for loot before you get vehicles to move further out. And I think that's good because that means that you have a lot to work with, right? You have a very when you can run between every single point of interest within a few seconds, it means you can do three quests a day, which means you can level up a lot faster. Whereas Navi's game, you can do one quest a day running and two with a bike and like three with a mini bike. And by the time you get a motorcycle, maybe four. But you're also spending a lot of gas because all the points of interest are pretty far apart in that first area. Like you really have to move out of the forest area in the Navi's game map before you're in a position where you can kind of loot to your heart's content in between quests. So, I recommend Random Gen. The Random Gen does an exceptional job right now, except for the fact that my little area of safety is pretty much completely surrounded by wasteland, which is dangerous as fuck, but has good loot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's nice. I think it gave you a lot of game there to chew on, guys. Which means I need to get you
a lot of game to chew on.
Means I got to get you a lot of fucking videos.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun experiment.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll figure out. Yeah, it says 7 Days to Die works great on deck. Do I want to play 7 Days to Die on my Steam Deck, though? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe the next week.
It'd be a little hard.
I'll install the Fallout 4 mod. She'll see. I've got a lot of game to chew on right now. Like, I'm not bored. Like, I'm not that Fallout would be boring. But I've got a lot to chew on to where, like, I'm very satisfied with what I'm playing. I really like Core Keeper. I really like Space Prison. I really like Cataclysmo and From Glory to Goo. Right? Like, I really like 7 Days to Die. I've got one called Wantless that I haven't even talked about that I'm going to try a little bit more of. I've got another game called Lone Star that I haven't talked about. Or Night Raider. Right, this is what happens when you still are a child and have adult money. Got Blasphemous 2. I have no playtime in that because I want to beat Blasphemous 1. I just found it on the Steam sale for like $15, so I picked it up. But most of the games that I think all of us, most of the games that we have are not full price games.
No. And that's why
There's like six big releases a year that I'm even interested in most of the time. Everything else I end up playing is a fucking small game.
Yep. And I mean, that's to be expected. We get limited funds and limited times to play, especially me.
Yeah, I think you have the most limited.
It's been long-standing over the last 6 to 8 years that I have a lot less time to play than I used to. And a lot less disposable income. But that's to be expected when you have 3 kids.
Yeah. So. You have 3 kids and Game Pass has quite a bit of love.
Yep.
There's quite a bit on Game Pass, honestly. To keep you busy, especially if you have limited time, you could focus on one game a month and get your money's worth. I know the price of it went up, right, for Ultimate, but if you finish one game a month, one full price game a month, you're still paying about a third of what you'd pay if you bought a brand new game every month.
Yep.
It's only $3. I don't know what people are bitching about. Well, I mean, inflation, right? Like, people have less money. So, I should be less of an asshole.
Right. But, alright guys, well, I think with that, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll come back with some news.
Alright, y'all. We'll be back. Back.
Woohoo! I don't know why I'm woohooing. Because I think we're going to lead into some news with some rather disappointing news.
Yeah. What were we just talking about?
So after 33 years of, I mean, what I think is some of the best, reviews and gaming featurettes in the industry, Game Informer has been shut down by GameStop. Like, one of the last really great bastions of GameStop is done. There is very little ceremony about it. It's just gone. The social media accounts, gone. There's nothing left of it. Apparently the team, I've not seen the issue yet. Apparently the team was at least given some notice for a last issue publication. But the second that issue was published, it's gone. The website's down. All the articles are wiped out. Except for what may have been grabbed by the Internet Archive, it's all gone.
Yeah, it's just weird that it just, like, disappeared almost overnight. It was like 12 people they're employing. It's not like it was a huge team that was working on it, you know?
Yeah, not like back in its heyday, right?
Yeah, like, just like, well, I guess this is not a thing anymore. Just going to get rid of this. Like, a long time ago, back when, you know, there wasn't as many internet outlets, right? Like, I read quite a bit of Game Informer, honestly. And again, it's been out for 33 years. So for me, it's been around since I was 9 years old. So I've been getting it since I was about, this is crazy, but I've been getting it since I was about 18. So
I've been getting it since I was 12.
But I, as of late, I haven't gotten it. I say late. Like, the last 5 years, I stopped going to GameStop. And it's because I became more of a PC gamer.
Yeah. Well, the last few years, unless you wanted to pay for the subscription, right, you weren't getting a physical copy anymore, right? And I quit paying for the physical copies several years back when I just can't handle, getting the having the additional paper in my house. But I was still, I kept up my GameStop membership just for the digital version of it, right? And I was still occasionally going through there. To be honest, the last few years, nothing groundbreaking in their articles, right? And they're, because of limited staff, their reviews weren't as in-depth as they used to be.
No, they weren't.
But, I mean, that's more a result of GameStop has been losing money hand over fist for nigh on a decade now.
But there's 12 people,
though.
They've
not been letting the money make... They've not been letting the magazine make money. And they've not been pumping any money into the magazine. So that was kind of to be expected. They kind of became a... still liked them better than Kotaku, but they kind of became a Kotaku as far as the review part came in, right?
Yeah. I'm not going to dive too far into this, but... I think Kotaku turned into, like, all of us are opinion sites, right? But Kotaku turned into, like, a social justice warrior reviewer. Like, everything had to do with SJW stuff, right? And it just got irritating. And like, basically, the thing is if that niche corner on the internet hated something, Kotaku is right there with them, right? They just side with internet mob rage on everything, to where it just colored reviews, it colors opinions, like everything. It's like a bunch of, Maybe they don't pay that much, but it's like there's a bunch of 25-year-old, barely out of college adults writing for Kotaku. The writing's not that good, and then everything's through that SJW lens, and it's just grating. So, you know, like, essentially, I've moved away from looking at any of their stuff, and, you know, I'll go with some of the YouTube channels, right? Like, Splattercat's one of the ones that I do. I'm trying to think of some of the other... I'd have to look at YouTube, but, like, I'm essentially going completely away from... Where, you know, like mid-2000s, early 20-teens, I probably read a fair amount of Kotaku. And then it just over time, it just ended up being something that I just didn't give a shit about, right? So now the things that I'm looking at for gameplay to kind of figure out what I'm going to play is going to be stuff like Splattercat Gaming, Fightin' Cowboy, Fextra Life, Boomstick Gaming, trying to think some of the other ones that I use. What is the ACG? ACG is another big one that I watch quite a bit of, but he doesn't post all the time. But he's got a whole podcast that I listen to sometimes too.
Occasionally, I'll still go to IGN for something.
Yeah. You know. And Jeff Gerstmann, I almost never agree with him, but I agree with why he doesn't like something. He has a well thought out point. The guy's been in games media forever. And has seen every iteration of every game. I legitimately think there's like 10 games that guy really likes. But for somebody who's hypercritical, it is refreshing to hear, because he's seen all these systems played out well and not well before, where he's not hyper-focused on the SJW or something. He's really more focused on, is this game something that people will have fun with, right? And so when Gerstmann gives something high praise, I pay attention. And then when he gives something critical, you know, praise of the critical eye, like I pay attention. He's got a very long podcast too, much longer than ours. And it's just him talking. But he's, you know, he was the reason I listened to Giant Bomb for so long was because of Gerstmann, honestly. Him and Vinny, and Vinny's got the other podcast they do. But I feel like that podcast has kind of went off the rails to where it's more about what they're up to. And a little bit about what they do game-wise. And I really like the podcast in general, right? But I feel like those guys are at a casual level of play with most of the stuff that they do. And their complaints come from somebody who, I don't know. They're not, like, the guy that was good at video games at Giant Bomb was Jeff Gerstmann, right? And everybody else was okay.
Yeah.
And the rest of these guys are so focused on everything else. Like, I think they have a passion for games, but they're all guys that are really for just based on the way their conversations go about difficulty of games. Not that I'm a fantastic gamer. I'm not a pro gamer at all. Rusty's not a pro gamer. Like, you're not a pro gamer. We're all pretty good. Like, you've got games you're good at. You're way better at shooters than all of us. Rusty is way better at manufacturing games and MMOs than all of us. I feel like I'm pretty well-rounded. Like, I was the guy that got everybody into the Souls thing, and I'm pretty decent at Souls games. But I, you know, I'm just a little bit above average on my game playing ability. But you know, listen to somebody who's like struggling with just the basics and something like Elden Ring, and I'm just like, okay, that was the casual version of those games. Here's all the systems that make it casual. I think that's a good thing that it's more casual than it used to be. But like, don't be hating on a game because it's too hard when it's the easiest one of those. Like, there's 20, you know, probably 20 million people that have beaten that game. It's not impossible by any means. It is not overly difficult. It's not a Neo. Neo is fucking hard. The Surge is pretty fucking hard. These games are not as hard as those. So like, there's a lot of those channels that have kind of strayed away from it, but out of the, like, the legacy people, Gerstmann is amazing. I can listen to his stuff in the background all day while I'm doing stuff just because I like the criticism. And you know, Game Informer, say sans 2012 was mostly like that, right? Like, you've got some pretty decent reviews of games, a good idea of what's coming out, really good, interesting interviews with developers and what they're doing and the types of systems they're making, right? Kind of like there was a, for a little while, there's been a little bit of a dark ages of video games. I'd say like the last 5 years. I know COVID kind of put a stink on everything with running, you know, when these games are on multi-year schedules, right? And then for 2 years, people are locked inside. You know, some of that collaborative effort suffered. I mean, not going to dig way into that, but some of us managed to work just fine, and then not everybody can be motivated the same to be working from home. And I don't know what kind of office collaboration it takes to make a game by any means, but I know for my job, I just got more productive because I had less distraction, and maybe it was the opposite. But yeah, a lot of game schedules ran behind after, you know, that happened. And so for like the last 4 or 5 years, like basically from 2020 till now, been kind of a games drought where like not a lot of AAAs have been coming out, and it's mostly like small development teams that have been releasing good stuff, which is why we've been covering it. But that bleeds over into something that I wanted to talk about because I think it's huge news. So there's a lot of, I don't know where the controversy is for the Star Wars Outlaws game, right? I don't know that there's controversy there. I'm just worried because it's Ubisoft, and Ubisoft tends to do their games in a certain way, right? But there's been mixed opinions about the game from preview videos. And I'm genuinely going to save my impressions until I play it, right?
Absolutely.
I'm genuinely interested in it, right? Maybe Ubisoft does something that's not just like Assassin's Creed and Far Cry, right? But what worries me is it got a positive trend from a lot of YouTubers, and then Tech for Gamers broke a story, and they might not have been the only person, right? Ubisoft offered VIP Disneyland tours to influencers after that capture session.
Really?
Yeah. So how does that not jade what I think about it? Like, are they so worried that – I don't know. All right, so here's somebody. Here's a streamer. Said, Ubisoft and Star Wars flew me out to California to play Star Wars Outlaws, interview the game director and lead writer, and meet the cast. I'm beyond grateful for this amazing opportunity. VIP tour of Disneyland tomorrow. Come on.
Wow.
And when you see that stuff, right, like they paid all these influencers and gave them a premium experience, right? So, like, the VIP tour is said to cost anywhere from $450 to $900 per hour, right? I don't know how many of these people they pulled out, but that's quite a bit of money. So, you know, they spent several thousand dollars influencing the influencers, right? And they're not your normal journalists, so, like, it's not something that, you know, I don't know how much people are paid off for certain things, right? Like, that's always the controversy or the conspiracy theory amongst gamers is so, you know, IGN was paid off for that, right? IGN legitimately does some good reviews sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, what the fuck are you thinking? But typically, like, they've got a pretty professional image to maintain, right? So I typically pay attention to IGN, right? Been in the business for like 40 years. So somebody there is seasoned. But anyways, that aside, like, I feel like some companies are going around that, particularly Ubisoft, and like, okay, well, influencers aren't a company. They're just individuals that have a YouTube channel. Like, what would you think if the Fun Pimps said, hey, we're not going to give you a bunch of money, but we're going to, you know, send you tickets to a cruise to eventually visit. Well, they're in Texas. I'm trying to think of it. We're going to send you on a Caribbean cruise, and when you get back, you can tour the office. And then you can meet the developers behind the Fun Pimps and talk about our game 7 Days to Die on your channel. Like, if that happened to us, I'd be like, what are you trying to pull one over on me, right? Like, I would refuse that. I would expect, you know, I would love to go tour their office, right? But that would really make me feel really suspect. If they're like, let me give you something that's not exactly money, but let me just pay a lot of money to send you on an experience to make sure that you're on high spirits when you come do our thing. Right? That just feels dirty and gross.
Yeah. Aunts.
That's just, it's insane. Speaking of IGN, even IGN is saying the new Borderlands movie is abysmal. A lot of the complaints have to do that it's a PG-13 rating on something that's typically pretty, you know, over-the-top humor, right? Pretty gory. Which also, it's just like the characters look about right, right? But like, what is the story? What is the story of Borderlands? You know what I mean? They gave it a 3 out of 10. It's also only made $40 million at the box office versus $120 million it cost to make. So one of the other things we've kind of been a reoccurring story is, the failure that it was Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad tanked hard. Like, they expected it to be the destiny of DC superheroes, and it just did not land. Essentially, the overall studio revenues for the quarter compared to the same period the year prior decreased 4%, which is all of their stuff, right? TV, theatrical, and video game studios. TV revenue declined 27%, right? Theatrical revenue increased 19%. So part of that was Dune Part 2 and Godzilla vs. Kong were both things that did significantly well, right? And I need to see both of those. Both of those seem pretty good. But for the video games,
they are good.
The video games division, games revenue declined 41%. And part of that is they're comparing. So Hogwarts Legacy was the year prior, and then this year was Suicide Squad. That's crazy, right? We're not even talking about total players. It is people that bought the game, right? So I don't know what's going to happen. It worries me because they also produce Mortal Kombat, right? But Mortal Kombat typically does good.
Yeah.
They went from having a record year with 2023's Hogwarts Legacy to 12 months later having one of the worst selling games of the year. Like the most DOA game that has happened so far. Something else is kind of crazy, right? We're talking about revenue streams. Nintendo is crazy about their anti-piracy stuff. So there are some YouTubers that transcribe games music into sheet music and then play it, right? Well, Nintendo is attacking those people, right? Saying that even arrangements their signs cannot be made at this point. And they're going after even stuff that's been, like, completely, like, stuff, like, artists, you know, people that have posts from years and years and years ago that haven't created anything new. They're even going after those.
Wow.
So, I don't know what the deal is with Nintendo and their copyright rules, but that stuff is just nuts. I think we've all heard about Marathon, right? Which is the Bungie. It's one of the original games. They were set for a release this year, and right now it's said that they think 2025, but they're not sure. They've had a lot of shakeup in their leadership, right? Chris Barrett was one of the executive producers, and so was Kerry Guskos. They both left that project. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do. I don't know if it's going to be one of those games that's been in development for years that finally just goes by the wayside, right? But who knows, right? Like, Destiny, the newest version of that, right, that I'm not even messing with at this point, is doing pretty good, even though it's going to be their last expansion before they work on something new. And I kind of wonder if they're just going to keep that live updating that and then just work on Marathon before they do another Destiny. Because Destiny, right, the whole Destiny series has been ongoing since, like, 2011. Like, when we started this show, Destiny was a thing. Right now, Control 2 is in the production readiness stage, which is crazy, considering that game didn't come out that long ago. That just means that it's past the proof of concept stage and is actually being actively developed and has some kind of playable state at this point.
Which is crazy good.
Yeah. Control is, I think, Remedy's best game. I really like Alan Wake. Alan Wake 2, I need to finish. I don't know why that didn't grab me as hard as Alan Wake 1, but Alan Wake 2, I need to finish. Apparently, that game still hasn't broken even a year later. So we're almost at a full year when that released in October of last year, and that still hasn't broken even. But Control did a lot better than that did. Controls on fucking everything, too. So I'm really interested in Control 2. I really like Control 1. I beat the shit out of that game. To me, it's kind of like kind of has like a Half-Life vibe to it, which is what I like about it. I don't know how to describe it unless I just really dove into why it reminds me of that. But it just, to me, it has Half-Life vibes and a paranormal version of Half-Life, even though it's third person. It just Half-Life vibes, like in game design concept is what I'm talking about.
I 100% agree with you on that. And
it's the environmental storytelling's done so well.
It perfectly blends some of the creepiness of Alan Wake into a more Half-Life style game, right? It's so good.
The environmental storytelling is what it has going forward. It runs on everything. It looks great on everything. And it's just a well done game. I don't know why I slept on Control 1. So like that is going to be a day one order when it comes out for me.
And by saying it's advanced to production readiness phase, let's preference that by the fact that they have had a development team starting work on it. And according to the article on Twisted Voxel, the team showcase a build featuring several key features in playable form. So that means they've kind of got maybe some new mechanics or even some old mechanics from the original game, you know, rebuilt in the new engine, and they're basically ready to start putting storyboards down and laying out a game, right? Like, that's what that tells me.
Something that's also interesting about Remedy in partnership with Rockstar, because that's who it was producing it before, they're working on the Max Payne 1 and 2 remakes, which means there's a potential release in the next couple of years. They have the tools that Rockstar is providing for them for those games. And they each have about a $50 million euro budget at this point. So I'm looking forward to that because Max Payne 1 is 23 years old.
Yeah, and that game absolutely deserves a remake because, you know, that game told a story and showcased mechanics that were way ahead of its time, that were way beyond, I think, that game engine's ability to really fully showcase it. And Remedy's current game engine could really, really showcase that story, the way that I think Rockstar originally imagined it being showcased as.
Well, and
you know what I mean?
And Remedy has Sam Lake, and Sam Lake is a pretty interesting creative director. He's kind of the driving force behind the, I mean, originally I think he was doing scans of his face for Max Payne, but he is the creative force behind the Max Payne series, the Alan Wake series, and the Control series. And that dude's got some crazy ideas with his stuff. And I really like the fact that he's like inserts himself into the games too, which I think is pretty cool. But interested to see what they do with that. I would love to play Max Payne again. Me and Trent played the hell out of 1 and 2 when it was out originally.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. Because as far as I'm concerned, those are Max Payne to me. Max Payne 3 just kind of fell flat for me. I don't know.
It did all right. It wasn't as good as the other one. It didn't do as good. It
wasn't as good.
2 was like the peak.
Yeah. Yeah. So the fact that Remedy is remaking both of those games in one shot, I'm just really looking forward to that.
So,
and still no idea as to what this Project Condor is, but that's also in full production, according to the article. So they've got another mystery game out there.
Yeah, the team behind Fallout London got some donations for the project, and they were talking to BBC via PC Games Network. The project lead, Dean Carter, admitted that they are going to create an indie game studio called Team Fallen, F-O-L-O-N. So they'll be working on a new game. They said, essentially, as much as it was really fun to start this during lockdown as a project, creating a new mod for Fallout New Vegas, or for Fallout 4, we want to create our own studio. So they're going to start a game studio.
I mean, that's cool.
Yeah. There's one more patch coming for that, and I think they're going to leave that alone unless there's probably if there's patches that conflict with it. But for right now, you have to roll back the version of the game to get it to work. So, yeah, I would say in the next month, depending on what comes out, I might give that a shot. But
I'm definitely going to be installing it. I just haven't had the time to really. I know the second I install it, I'm going to want to play it, and I'm going to want to play it all the way through. So,
yeah, and it's like just not
taking time to do that yet.
50 to 100 hour commitment, probably. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I don't really have much else. Did you have anything that I didn't cover?
No, not really that I didn't see. I will say, if y'all haven't gone and seen, Deadpool and Wolverine yet, which I think most of the country has at this point.
Except for me.
God, that was so good. We've got some upcoming game releases to cover here. So for the remainder of the month, we have the remastered version of Sim & Max, The Devil's Playhouse, coming out to all platforms in a couple days on the 14th. Black Myth Wukong releases for PC and PS5 on August 20th. Dustborne full release coming everywhere on the same day. Lord of the Rings Return to Moria comes out August 27th.
On Steam?
On Xbox Series X and S. Sorry,
it's not that. It's not worth it unless they've drastically changed it.
Yeah. And Star Wars Outlaws on August 30th.
I'm gonna wait till the week after to play that, probably.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to give that a minute. The big news for us tiltcasters, because all of us are looking forward to this, Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2 comes out September 9th everywhere.
Shit, I might be what I'm playing instead of Star Wars for a little while.
Right. We've got the Lollipop Chainsaw Repop on PC, Switch, and the next gen consoles on September 12th. God of War Ragnarok comes to PC September 19th for those who've already not played it yet, like me. And that's it for big releases for the next month or so. So,
yeah. As indie releases come out that I want to let you guys know about, that's what I'll be doing. Be playing lots of indie games. And then if any of these bigger releases that are, you know, three times the price of an indie game are worth it, I'll let you guys know.
All right, guys. With that, you can find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast, and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast or tbgp.tv. They cover all things Destiny. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.